Welcome to Transformation Talks. I'm your host, Bill Penzack. I'm the Chief Transformation Officer for the Center for Accounting Transformation. During these episodes, we'll visit with a spectrum of firm practitioners who are successfully navigating their own changes within their firms, their real-life examples of transformation in the accounting profession. And today with me is Dustin Verity. He's the managing partner of a firm in Hawaii, and we'll let him talk about the firm a little bit. And we're going to talk about some of his journey and the firm's journey in terms of transportation. So, Justin, tell us about your background and tell us about the firm.
Oh, thanks, Bill. Sure. It was actually started my career off Grant Thornton and their Southern California practice. And, you know, after working there for several years, you know, I really, really enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong, but just spending, you know, 2 to 4 hours a day on the 405 just, you know, can wear a person down on top of the long hours. And, you know, friend of a friend deal put me with a real estate developer in Hawaii. You know, they paid for the move. And after doing that for several years, rejoined Grant Thornton, but in their Honolulu office. Had a much shorter commute, which made it a lot more, a lot nicer. And then when they pulled out of the market, eventually ended up starting my own firm. And, you know, initially it was just me, myself. And in February, we hit 10 years and now we're up to about 22 full-time employees. So it's been quite the journey.
I guess so. So when we first talked, I guess about a month or more ago, you were telling me about some of the technologies that you all are already using, which I found kind of unusual for a firm your size. Can you talk about why you've made some of those investments and some of those adoptions now, early on versus later on when you're at a bigger scale?
I've always been interested in technology and you know, efficiencies. And to the extent that, you know, we can produce more work, more efficiently, that means less hours that we have to spend in the office ourselves, right? And then we can go out and enjoy the, you know, beach and the sun and so forth here in Hawaii. Over the years, technology has kind of grown to our second largest expense, right under compensation. And, you know, sometimes, you know, get so interested, get so wrapped up into it, that, you know, we'll jump in there and, commit for a year or so and experiment with a tool and find that it doesn't work, or maybe it is too big for our firm. And then we'll move on and try something new, but there's so many, choices out there and there's so many new tools coming out. Just for the different service lines, right? Tax has its own tech stack and CAS has its own. And then audit, there's a lot of exciting things happening in audit now, which is great because that is such a labor intensive service line. So it's great to see things kind of moving to greater efficiencies in that practice as well.
Was that a tough decision to make these investments? Are you personally like predisposed to understanding, appreciating, using technology yourself?
Right, exactly. I'm always looking for the new gadgets and I like to, you know, play with the new toys as they come out and so forth. And, you know, it's just one of those where I just, you know, really I'm kind of drawn towards it. Just the different tools and the different technologies out there. You know, always kind of feel like there's a better way to do things. Like there's some improvements to be made constantly. I like to reevaluate the process over and over just to kind of see where the kinks are, where we can troubleshoot, where we can make the process better, where we can streamline it. And, you know, there's always training with the professionals. And then another component I always see is just the ability to integrate technology in to make the process smoother, to reduce some of the redundancies, smooth out some of the kinks, and really try to get away from having, you know, a professional sitting there tying invoices out to a general ledger or an AR schedule, and then tying that to a bank statement, when there's tools out there now that can help automate that process in its entirety.
I call that smart people doing stupid work.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you think about it, you get the people that you get working in this profession, in my opinion, are smarter than the average bear. And, you know, especially the ones who earn their CPA, that's not an easy task to take. And they graduate and you put them, and any firm puts them into a staff position, and they're doing a kind of menial task that you just described.
Right.
And they're probably wondering, why the heck did I make this career choice? Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate the fact that firms like yours are making that investment to be able to take that drudgery work away from people and let them do higher value work for their clients.
Right. I mean, you know, nowadays, if you look at it, the professionals coming out of college, you know, it used to be their starting salary was maybe around 50,000. And then it, you know, all of a sudden it was 55. Well, now it's closer to 60,000, you know, straight out of college. And to have, you know, somebody do that level, you know, being paid that level and have that level of, you know, background and education, and then to put them doing something that menial, you know, just didn't make any sense to me either. And so one of the technologies that we adapted around that this really helped that process out was a data snipper. And so, yeah, you can spend, you know, cost $2,000 to $10,000 every year. But if you're saving $50,000 in labor costs, it totally makes sense, right? The cost benefit is there. Yeah. And it helps out with some of those menial tasks like that.
Are you doing anything on the client accounting services side from a technology standpoint?
Oh, yeah.
tell me about that.
We do. That's probably the more tech heavy service line out of all of them, because, every client needs to be an online accounting application, and we're more of a QuickBooks Online and a Xero shop. And then from there, you know, just depending upon what the clients need, if they need payroll, then we integrate Gusto with either of those platforms. If they need help with budgeting and managing costs, you know, we introduce them to Divi. If they need help with AP, it's bill.com. And then we get all those systems integrated with all their bank feeds and so forth. And then we partner with BotKeeper to help automate that process altogether. You know, and here again, it's letting them do the menial bank rec tasks and, you know, tie this to the bank statement and so forth. Let them do all those root processes. They take care of all that. They let us know if there's any one-off transactions that we can help with. We review the financials. We review the AP, you know, in bill.com. And we do all the higher level reviews. But here again, you have professionals reviewing the work and preparing the financial statements versus, you know, inputting an invoice in the AP or doing a bank recon or updating somebody's hours for payroll.
Do you feel like there's been, because of those investments, a resulting improvement in your retention of people? Or is it hard to tell? I know the market's kind of goofy right now overall, but do you think people are staying around because they're doing more challenging work rather than those other labor-intensive tasks?
Oh, absolutely. They feel like it's a lot more worthwhile. They feel like they're able to put their degree into practice and they get better value out of the work. And then we as a firm get greater efficiency. So instead of having like someone out of college, you know, sit there and work on 3 to 5 accounting clients every month. Now they can supervise 15, right? So it makes a huge difference. And yeah, you know, initially BotKeeper looked like it was going to be, you know, probably outside of our price range. It was a hard pill to swallow. They were kind of newer at the time. It was a new service line that we were getting into. And so it was really just a leap of faith. But, you know, I did do due diligence. I read through all their agreements. I did all their demos. And I talked to some of their existing clients as well. And that was, other CPA firms that they had partnered with. And that was huge. And so we just, took that leap of faith. And here we are. I think we've been with them about 5 years or so now. And it's just been a very rewarding partnership.
So have you been able to track with any kind of level of detail, any kind of improvement in margin contribution as a result of some of the investments that you're making? You know,
Oh,
obviously firms look at, we want to be more efficient. And, you know, you said it yourself, there's an expense that goes with that. But if you look at the before and after, are you satisfied that your overall margin has been improved because of those technology investments?
yeah, no doubt. We went from 30 to, 20 to 30% margins on that work to about 40 to 60%.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So
margins about doubled. Yeah.
that's impressive. Any other technology like on the that you want to talk about, like on the audit side, maybe?
Oh, the audit side has a lot of, interesting stuff or exciting stuff coming out. I already mentioned Data Snipper. Very looking forward to the DAS, the Dynamic Audit Solution. Very much looking forward to that. We're starting to do a lot more with Caseware Cloud right now. And I believe that's the platform that DAS is built on as well. So, really looking forward to that. We had previously piloted PCR for the prep comps and reviews, and we really like that tool and how it made it a more interactive experience with the management. Set them as up as a user on the platform, and let them participate in the audit, so to speak, as well, so that they could, respond to the inquiries, populate in the audit tool or the PCR, that tool. We could review it, follow up with them, and so forth. And it just made that whole process a lot more streamlined. The only reason we didn't fully adopt it at that time is we needed the full solution. We also needed the audit solution. And that wasn't available at that time, but very much looking forward to DAS. And then, of course, we'd probably pick up PCR as well as the EBP tool at that same time.
I meant to ask you this earlier. What's the split among audit, tax, and client accounting services?
So we initially started off as an audit shop because that was my background at Grant. And then over the years, it's just changed, and now it's shifting to where it's more tax and CAS heavy. 2 years ago, it had been about 60% audit, and now it's about 50-50 audit and then CAS. I kind of group CAS and tax in the same bucket.
Is there a great degree of overlap between the tax clients and the CAS clients?
Exactly. A lot of times
Yes.
it's small businesses that will do their accounting for, and then also their tax work as well. And then we'll do the owner's tax returns as well. So that's why there's a lot of overlap. So it's really hard to kind of
Sure.
segregate those out a little bit. So.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the big issues in the industry today, is finding and retaining talent. In fact, the center did a little piece of research for one of the associations, and guess what? And like the number one and two issues had to do with finding people or holding on to the people that they had, and the resulting cost increases that went with that. And you're in a comparatively small market in terms of population. And so, how my understanding is you've been using offshoring. How has that worked for you, and how does that alleviate some of the capacity issues? And then also, did you have to overcome, you know, some of the bias that I think a lot of firms have against offshoring, either because they're concerned about what clients are going to think, or the cultural differences, or time difference? Maybe not in your case, the time difference so much from you sitting in Hawaii, but what were some of the thought processes that you went through, and what are some of the outcomes that you've seen as part of that part of your transformation?
Yeah, so that was another one of those leaps of faith. And honestly, before the pandemic, we were one of those that were we're one of those firms that we're very much hesitant, reluctant. We're very much like, you know, what are the clients going to think? You know, just every, you know, what you were mentioning. But I think, you know, now that, you know, we've been through the pandemic and you look at the people working virtually, you know, what difference is it really from, you know, somebody working or East Coast firm in California? How much different is that really than, you know, somebody on the mainland working for, you know, a Hawaii firm? So we, you know, and it's kind of the, now that that box has been open, so to speak, the line, the geographical lines are kind of blurred and it's all just on technology now. So we started onshoring a lot of our tax returns where it made sense. And then I already talked about the accounting services and how we partner with BotKeeper there. And then they have, you know, folks overseas and so forth, as well as their technology. But yeah, I mean, I think really it was that there's a whole paradigm shift because of the pandemic. And now, you know, I see no reason why not to embrace it. I was reading an article, it might have been in accounting today or somewhere, they were talking about 30% of all tax and accounting work is offshore nowadays. And I just see that number getting bigger. It's, we don't necessarily, like I mentioned, we don't have the folks that want to do that, that entry. We don't, you know, have the folks that want to be doing the grunt work. So to the extent that there are those folks in different geographic locations that can fill that void and then have our folks do more meaningful work, then that's great. You know, there are some time zone constraints here and there, but at the end of the day, we've been able to work with our partners to make sure that we have regularly scheduled meetings and everything's lined up and so forth. And I actually see us do more offshoring in the future as well when it comes to the tax and CAS practice. The audit side is a little tricky just because there's judgment that goes there into it. And, you know, I know that some firms are doing it now, and I'm kind of interested to see the outcome of that. But for the most part, on the audit side, we've been more readily embracing technology to help fill some of that, you know, take out some of that menial work. But I would like to be able to offshore more audits, but it would get, you know, it's just, I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think within the next couple of years, especially once, you know, more of these online audit platforms come out, that'll be a lot easier to offshore that work and so forth.
Are you, in terms of the offshoring you're doing now for tax and for CAS, are you using like an aggregator or a company to find people, or do you have a separate operation set up that's your company, or how did you structurally do that?
Right now we're going through, well, I've already used plenty of other names. Right now we're going through CCH. They have a program.
Okay.
And we're really interested in, you know, revisiting SurePrep and GruntWorks as well in the future. We're not to the size yet where we can set up our own firm, you know, in the Philippines or India. But I know there's other larger firms that have offered up, you know, us partnering with them and them helping us get set up and so forth. So there are those relationships that are available. But right now we're pretty comfortable going through, you know, the service providers that are already established and already have like a set program in place.
So one of the other cool things that we talked about in the prep for today's call was dealt with making the organization more flat. And I think we had talked about an article about firms in general, companies in general, are trying to eliminate managers. And you kind of, what we were talking about, you guys have done that already. Can you talk about the decision to have a flatter staffing model and what the benefits have been to the firm and to your clients?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a determination that was made or just the reality of our situation. It was, we had a top, and then we had, you know, folks coming in straight out of college. So there wasn't necessarily any like, hey, we're going to flatten our organization. And yeah, no, that was just how we ended up.
Okay. Okay.
It is, you know, there's pros and cons to it, just like everything else. The joke always is, you know, hey, we're going to spend, you know, we've been looking for that 5-year audit manager for 5 years kind of thing, right? And so we've always been in the process like, hey, let's, you know, develop a great internship program, look to hire from that program, and, you know, develop folks over time, and, you know, make sure they're doing meaningful work, make sure that it's, you know, a happy work environment, that everybody enjoys being here. Everybody has fun, and, you know, hopefully they'll stick around, you know, just treat everybody well. And that's happened. So now the interns that started with this, you know, maybe they started 3 years ago as an intern. Now they're senior associates, you know, and they're all doing well, and they're all progressing, and we're encouraging, you know, get their CPA license and continue moving up. But, you know, as a result of having the flatter organization, I think there's a lot more hands-on that the staff has, of course, with the partners now, because there's no, you know, they're not going to a manager and then there's a manager review and then they go to the partner and there's a different partner review. So the partners are much more involved. There's less level of reviews. It's a little bit more efficient. You don't have one manager say to do it one way and then the partner saying it to do another. You just cut out that middle altogether. The clients get more face time because they're also not dealing with a middleman. And honestly, it results in a much more efficient audit, and I think a much better experience for the staff, right? Of course, maybe not as nice of an experience for the partners, because now they're training, reviewing, networking, selling, client issues, and they have their hands full a little bit more than what they normally would have. But, you know, at the end of the day, we monitor that and we try to make sure that nobody's working more than they need to or should be, and so forth.
So as you've grown, as the firm has grown, how do you personally, as the managing partner, juggle all the balls? So I've seen other firms that grow up to be, you know, $10, $15, $20 million. And, you know, you've got a small partner group or a managing partner that's probably the founder and may still be running or operating the firm, this $20 million firm or this $30 million firm, still running the firm like they did when it was a $5 million firm. And it seems like, and I'm not trying to lead the witness, but it seems like you've built some infrastructure, definitely on the technology side. But what are you doing on the firm operations side? So you're not the bottleneck of making decisions and moving things forward. And how do you do that on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, that was, so initially I found I was like, the IT guy, the HR guy, you know, operations guy, the guy ordering supplies, the guy's doing, and, you know, and it was, that ended up being all that I was doing, and that's still my client load, and I still had, you know, the other professionals in the firm to meet with and take care of and so forth. And it was one of those where, you know, I just said, I'm tired of doing this. There has to be a better way of doing it. And so then I started outsourcing the IT functions. Then I hired a operations HR director. Then we started even partnering and outsourcing some of our own internal accounting. And now we've just recently brought on a VCISO, information security officer, outsourced that function as well. And we're bringing in more and more administrative operations staff now that are just great. You know, they're helping out with the billings and the client, you know, returning some of the calls and the follow-ups and so forth. And so it's one of those where I was becoming the bottleneck. Everybody was coming to me for everything, and that's not necessarily what I wanted to be. I didn't see myself as I had to control everything. I just had to put good people in the right places and trust them to do what's in the best interest of the firm.
Do you all ever have conversations about highest and best use? So I've had these conversations with like mm-hmm. partner groups, and you know, not everyone's created equally, and some have different skills in terms of administration. Some have different skills in terms of technical skills. Others are better in business development. Do you all have those kind of conversations about, you know, kind of beyond what you're doing for the client in terms of running the firm and what your personal highest and best use is, and any others as well? And how do those conversations go?
So that is actually where we're headed to next. We're looking into doing more because it's such a size now where it makes a little bit more sense. You can kind of see people they'll trend towards, or they'll, what they're interested in, they'll knock it out of the park. What they're not interested in, it kind of gets done when they get to it, kind of a thing. And so you can see that kind of play out without having gone through that exercise. But, you know, as we continue to grow, that's definitely something that we're looking at. And that's our next hot topic with firm development and firm growth. So, yeah.
Probably the best example of that, or one I'm certainly familiar with, is business development, where, you know, a lot of firms will say, everyone's got to bring in business, and mm-hmm. you know, the ones that are good at it, even if they're not experienced in it, can knock it out of the park, and the other ones will find every reason under the sun not to do whatever. And, yep. and so, you know, and I've kind of personally come to the conclusion that I tell clients this, that, you know, if it's out of somebody's wheelhouse, then why are you trying to make them do it? There's other ways that they can contribute to the firm. And exactly. It sounds trite, but it takes a village. And mm-hmm. if you've got some people that are good at some things and other people are good at other things, you shouldn't force them to do things out of their skill set or out of their comfort zone. But there's still a place for them.
Right. You're absolutely right. And so we've been making, like, you know, administrative type assignments based on where I see people trending towards, right? Like if we have an audit director who likes to be more involved with training and QC, you know, we kind of give him more of those responsibilities. And then maybe not so much of the, you know, hey, can you return these sales calls? Can you go meet with this potential client? So forth. And then there's the ones that really like to meet with existing clients and really spend a lot of time with them. And, you know, we let them go run with it and let them do that. And, you know, there's ones that like to spend a lot of time on the staff, and they like to spend a lot of time in the details and the binders and so forth, and we let them go for it, and we just try to make assignments on what people appear to be the best at without necessarily having gone through a formal program.
Yeah, it all goes back to something that was written like 30 or more years ago, of the finders, the minders, and the grinders. And mm-hmm. I think that still holds true. I mean, it sounds a little bit trite now, but I think that spirit is still alive and well, because people are good at certain things, and that's okay. And if you can figure out how to get the best out of each person, then collectively you can come together.
Right, exactly. And one thing we have started doing is like personality test. Like we'll do the DISC assessments, and it's probably been a year or so since we did the last one. So we're probably due to do another one, but then we'll have everybody, like, we'll have, after they do it, have everybody share the results, and then we'll talk about how the different personalities think and operate, and how, you know, we can work best together, and then what some of these folks tend to trend towards doing better than others. And, you know, while some people may say, well, you know, you're just taking somebody and putting them in a cookie cutter type of thing, or some people are totally against labels or what have you. Still, I mean, there's a little bit of truth to be had in those personality tests. And, you know, it may be you know, some see it as
just. But it also opens up the whole ability to have the conversation about why, not just the how part of it, and understanding somebody else's perspective of whatever they are in that disc profiling. Although I remember doing this with one firm, and on the professional staff, like 60% of the people on the professional staff were in the same buckets. And then some of the administrative people, like the marketing people and the HR people, were kind of the outliers, and a couple of the audit people were kind of in that same bucket. But I do think that's helpful, because it invites that conversation about, one, everyone's got different skills and different perspectives, and you got to learn how to work with that. And one size doesn't fit all. And so it's a more nuanced way of managing, but I think it's a more effective way of managing.
Right. No, we totally saw that as well. Like, the majority of the eyes were on the audit side, and then more of the SCs were on the tax side, kind of thing. So we totally kind of saw that split as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. So one of the other things that we had talked about when we were doing the prep for today's call was how being part of an association and the working groups have allowed you to learn from others who've gone before you. Can you give us an example of a transformation that was made possible through your association with an association?
Oh, sure. And not a problem. Yeah, that was one of the things that I started doing. Because when you're starting your own firm, you don't necessarily know, there's no playbook for it, right? You kind of, you know, if you're in a larger firm, then, you know, you may know pieces and this and that, you know, you got to, you know, register with the board, you got to get licensed, you got to get insurance, you know, all those things. But there's so much that you don't know. And I've always been one of those where, let me benchmark off some larger peer groups and so forth. And so right away, I got involved with AICPA's, the PCPS Technical Issues Committee. From there, I got involved with ARSC and now PCPS Executive Committee. And also along the way, I've been in a couple associations, right? I was in RSM's Firm Foundation, which is now APRIO's Firm Alliance. And always try to go to the conferences, you know, the dinners and the different events and so forth, and just network and hear what other folks are doing. I mean, there's always the agenda that takes place in the meetings and, you know, the set discussions and things like that. But the real value I found was always after hours, at the dinners, at the happy hours, where you can pick somebody's brain on what they're doing and what they're seeing. And I've been fortunate to really be, I have met a lot of great folks over the years that are very willing to help out and share information and so forth. But as far as listing some examples, it's kind of easy. Like Data Snipper was one of them. Audit Miner was another one.
That's the EBP product.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's the EBP tool for EBP audits. So those are two easy examples. BotKeeper was one I had heard about, but then I bounced it off some of my peers that I knew through different associations. SurePrep is another one. So, I mean, the list can go on and on. Like a lot of times I'll hear it and then I'll bounce it off these other folks. Oh yeah, we're using that. Matter of fact, we had a round table the other day at an APRIO's Firm Alliance. And that was the main topic of discussion, is like, hey, which technologies are you using? How's offshoring going? Who's doing this? Who can give some other advice? And I mean, those types of discussions are just priceless. It's really a great sounding board, and folks can tell you their experiences with the different technologies and the different trends that they're seeing in their marketplace as well. And it's just a nice place to like share ideas. None of us are competitors. We're all in different markets. So it's not like we're giving away any sort of trade secrets or, you know, colluding together to form some sort of oligopoly.
No price, exactly.
Right. So, but yeah, definitely worthwhile for any small firm out there to join and just share ideas. And they also provide technical resources as well if you need to do a mm-hmm. consultation and so forth. So very beneficial.
On the solution side, like some of the R&D credits or some of those specific service lines, exactly. Forensic accounting.
Right.
That smaller firms don't necessarily have, but you've got a resource there that's not going to try to poach your clients.
Right. 606 issues, 842 issues. Exactly. Yeah. Another great resource I failed to mention was the CPEA, the Center for Plain English Accounting. That's also a great resource to reach out to.
Okay.
They provide, you know, consultations and trainings and so forth as part of that membership. And that's been pretty invaluable to our audit practice as well. We do a lot of consultations through them, and they'll provide a written response that can be printed and put in the work papers.
So almost like having a national desk, like the big firms do.
Yes, sir. Exactly. Oh, right.
That's great. That's great. And they probably get back to you quicker than some of the national desks and some of the bigger firms.
Usually within 24 hours.
Okay. That's better than some of the stories I've heard from some of the national and regional firms.
But I know.
So final question, when it comes to transforming, so we talked about people, talked about offshoring, we've talked about some of the technology investments that you've made, you've talked about kind of your own personal journey as the leader of the firm. What two or three pieces of advice would you have for other managing partners or trying to figure out, you know, what's next? You know, you got your day job and trying to keep your clients happy, keep your people happy. And then you've also got to kind of look forward. What advice do you offer to other people trying to do that?
Well, I don't know if I'm any expert in any of that, but, you know, I can definitely share with you what I do. And that's, you know, it's like I'm constantly reading, not just Accounting Today and Journal of Accountancy, but also Wall Street Journal, Business Insider, Bloomberg, and so forth, just seeing what the trends are in other markets, seeing how things are going, reading up on the latest in technology, you know, attending the conferences, being active in the associations, and really just, you know, being open-minded to new things, listening to the staff, hearing what they have to say, what their concerns are, and, you know, really just trying to stretch the capabilities of the firm and trying to get out ahead of the technology curve so that, you know, we don't get blindsided by it. And just trying to see how we can make everybody's lives better at the firm through leveraging technology and, you know, offshoring. And you know, it's a lot more, you know, it's a lot more meaningful work for the staff. And it's usually a lot faster turnaround for the clients. Everybody gets more time off and it's better margins, you know, why not?
Yeah. You hit on all cylinders with that. Well, it's been great. So I appreciate your time. You have a great story and I think you're very humble about it. And you know, I love the way just kind of that discovery that you've gone through yourself and it seems to be working. So congratulations for that.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's it for another episode of Transformation Talks. Be sure to visit the website, www.improvetheworld.net for resources related to firm transformation, articles, some of the programs that we have and some of the classes and seminars that we have as well. So once again, that's www.improvetheworld.net. So until next time, this is Bill Penzack and we'll see you then.